Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Engage to Flourish podcast. This is Damon. I got Kyle with me and we have a very special guest on this episode. I think you might know him as Batman. Welcome to the show, Batman.
Where is he?
All right, well, if you weren't in this past Sunday's sermon, Batman is actually Brett and he gave a cool Batman impression. I thought it would be cool to hear it on the podcast.
Batman is my favorite superhero, so for you to call me Batman, I appreciate that.
Yeah, you got it, man.
Yeah, we can have the Batman versus Superman debate later, because Superman is my favorite superhero. But for this episode, we actually get a chance to talk with Brett, because he's the one that gave the sermon this past Sunday on God being a pursuer. And I thought it was a really good sermon, illustrating the ways that God pursues us, and I think it was interesting how Brett tied Batman in. Do you want to share a little bit of your insight into how you incorporated your Batman?
Yeah, I think the passage that stuck out to me most, and I've heard it before and I've talked about it. Actually, I did a teaching with a Forge about it in terms of like how God responds to us in our sin and stuff. And more taking it towards identity, but this time around, it was taking a look at it in terms of God being a pursuer. And so in the beginning, when Adam and Eve, when the fall happens, sin enters the world, and now they're ashamed, they're guilty, they hide. And there is a consequence to sin, and that's the part after that I didn't get into, but the way that God responds is he like goes to them, mm-hmm. right? And he asks them, where are you? And in researching it and looking over different commentaries, the question, where are you? It wasn't, there was no like hidden agenda behind that question. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes like, well, when you're a kid and you get in trouble, when you go run and hide, right? That where are you is like, uh-oh, like I'm in trouble, right? Or yeah. somebody's coming for me. And right. I think that's probably, well, it was expressed by what Adam and Eve did, that that's how they were feeling. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to hide from this guy. And just before that, right, they didn't have to do that. They didn't mm-hmm. feel the need to do that. They were completely naked. They were fine. They didn't even realize it. They saw things all good and well. And then that shift takes place. And so keying in on that shift shows their reaction. But then God's reaction is to just come to them and ask, where are they? And so I used Batman to explain how that's not the way that God came into the picture. That was not how God responded. It wasn't out of anger or trying to bring vengeance to them or whatever it is you associate with that. And I guess the reason why I painted it in that way was I wanted people to reflect on when we deal with sin or have dealt with sin, or there's things we're not proud of, like, do we try to shy away from God in that way, the same way that Adam and Eve do, hide, cover ourselves, you know, get worried about God seeing it, and because we feel like he's going to come in and be like, you're an idiot, you're dumb, I'm disappointed in you, whatever it is, but recognizing that those are things that are actually not of God, but the way that God comes in is like, I want to know where you're at. I want to know where is your heart. I'm concerned with the condition that you're in. And so I wanted to bring some light to it too. So that's why the Batman thing was in there, just to hopefully get a few laughs or people to be a little caught off guard by that. But really the illustration is to show kind of how God wasn't, to paint the correct picture of how he was.
Yeah, I think your use of Batman really helped to illustrate how a lot of people think of God when they think of him come pursuing them, right? It's like mm-hmm. he's pursuing them because he's upset or angry and he's trying to get them mm-hmm. versus how you described it, where he's actually trying to show his care for our heart, mm-hmm. the things that led us to the sin and not just judging the sin. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a cool way to use Batman.
For sure.
I think it makes, like for me, when I was prepping and even in the season that I'm in, not that I feel like I'm hiding, but just like asking kind of, God, where are you? to reflect on God being pursuer, I guess framing it in that way to me makes God feel more like real. Mm. Like he's not so high above or like put on a pedestal that I feel like I can't be personal with. Mm. Because like I also envision like if I ask my friend or I ask somebody I'm talking to, you like, how are you? Or like, hey, where are you at with this? There's like a genuine concern of like, I want to know how you're doing, where you're at with it. Do you have a good understanding of it? Are you looking at things the correct way or are things twisted in your head? And then me being able to meet you at that place, I can walk with you in that. And so in the same way, it's like me being able to receive God that way. And it's like, oh, okay, he wants to walk with me in this. He wants to be with me. It's like a little more, in a weird way, accepting of what God is doing rather than like, kind of like, oh gosh, here it comes. Like, I'm going to have to deal with a bad consequence or God's going to make me go through this because he's mad at me or I didn't learn this. It's more like, yeah, there might be testing or growth or you have to deal with the lie, the sin or whatever, but it's not like God's observing you in terms of you either pass or fail. It's like, I'm going to walk with you in it. So like follow me type of thing.
Yeah. I really liked how you incorporated the three parables, the parable of the lost sheep, the lost coin and the prodigal son or the lost son. And how you described and showed in each of those how God pursued.
Mm.
And I felt for me like, oh, I connected with those parables in a different way. Because I think it can feel like it's from like the lost of like, you're not saved and that kind of thing. But even like I've had seasons where I've felt lost in certain ways or certain maybe things I'm struggling with or dealing with where that when you described it that way, that's in light of that or in spite of that, God still pursues. Mm. I thought, oh, that was a really good point to bring out.
Yeah, the lost coin one was the trickiest, just in that it kind of gives the least amount of detail or like picture.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain things that I didn't include just because of time and like relevance to what's going on. But a lot of it shows too, like worth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Right. Like the 99 versus the one, like a lot of commentaries talk about like the one, he's not saying, okay, well I have 99. So like, I'm good. Mm-hmm. It's like God still cares about the one. Mm-hmm. Right. And so even in our lives, like talking about surrender or wholeheartedness, like it's not like God only cares about even 99% of our heart or where we're at. He cares about the whole 100, right? He cares about every little piece. And so even like the woman with the coin, okay, it's not that, you know, losing a penny or losing a dime, okay, whatever, but it's like, it's valuable enough where I'm going to search everywhere, light the lamp, look diligently for 10 cents, you know, I mean, it's a different monetary value that back
right,
then, but
right, right.
That same concept. And so it was convicting for me. And I really felt like the things that I was speaking, like I'm speaking it aloud, I don't want to say to myself, but it's kind of like I'm wrestling through, thinking through it as I'm preparing for the message. And then even me sharing it is kind of like a declaration that like I need to believe and think about these things too. Like I want to live it out and be about it if I'm going to say it in front of our congregation. I'm not just looking it up to say, oh, this will be a good word for them. It's like, okay, well, how are you in this place? And if you don't have the answer, can you walk with people in whatever process you feel like God is calling us to or you to? And so there's been plenty of times where I felt like that one sheep that was wandering off and sooner than you know it, you're quote unquote lost, but God finds his way to bring you back home.
Yeah. I thought it was really neat how when you were talking about the woman searching for the coin, you know, in my perspective, because this is how I am, when I lose something, you kind of flesh that out a little bit too. It's like, man, this is going to make me late, or I can't believe I lost this again, or what am I thinking, and all this stuff. And it's like all negative stuff. But then when you fleshed it out and you gave a different perspective on it in terms of, what if she was in a good mood looking for it? And that's part of her countenance as she's looking for it. It's like, oh, that's different. And illustrating kind of how you tied it to the kids' declaration of God being in a good mood. It's like, oh, that's a very different way of looking at it. I thought that was a different perspective. It was challenging me to shift my paradigm in how I think God is pursuing me, but then also, oh, maybe he wants me to have a different perspective when I lose something and I'm looking for it too.
Talking to you about it beforehand and what you were doing with kids ministry and what we were doing, to me, that was the final piece and the affirmation to the message and just how it connected and how God's spirit is just woven through where our church is going, the different ministries. It felt like, because I had other stuff, but I feel like the way that it tied in and it being directly with what's going on with the kids, and then being able to relay that in a way to the congregation that also gives them an insight to what the kids are going through, but then also relevant to the message being spoken. To me, that was like a final affirmation from God. Like, no, this is kind of like you heard me correctly in what you're supposed to talk about. And so just the ways that it tied in was challenging, but I think it fit well. And it wasn't like I was forcing it to fit, but like, oh no, this. And so I really appreciate being able to talk to you about it. And even though you were in the back, like just the ways that it was connected. And so
I know I was in the back catching strays. Afterwards, Tracy was like, you know, Brett called you old today. And I was like, what?
Whoa. I'll clarify. I didn't say that you were old. I just told people that since you coached me, it would let them know how old you are. So yeah, if they want to determine you're old, that's on them.
No, you navigated that very carefully. And I thought you did that with very much a lot of wisdom. So props to you, Brett.
Well, you might have navigated it very well, but that was not necessarily the message that was received by certain people.
Well, that's their problem. I liked just hearing you even talk about those parables too. It made me think of viewing God as, and I know this isn't, you'd be careful of how I say this, but viewing God as incomplete with us not being there. So I know God is not incomplete and he's, you know, he's perfect in every way, but there's an aspect that he's more complete, even though I know that's not the right wording to use, when we are part of him. So like leaving the 99 to go get the one, it's worth it because for him, us all being there, the whole 100, the coin, the lost son, there's something missing for him. And so then he has that heart to always pursue. And it's like, I want everyone, like kind of like the, you know, he's a jealous God. He wants all of us to be there. He wants every part of us. And so not even just wants us, he wants, like you said, the whole heart. So I thought that was, that was really, really interesting.
Yeah, the quote I use for that too, it hit me because I know even on this podcast, I've talked a lot about like, oh, we all have a choice to make. We have a choice to live things out. We have a choice to whatever it is, talk to somebody, bring things to the light. And in those parables, it's kind of like implicit or given, but like the shepherd chooses to go out. Like he wants to find the sheep. It's not like I have to, like, oh gosh, I have to. And so if you picture God in that analogy, it's like he wants to find you. Like he wants to go out into the wilderness where who knows where that sheep is, and he wants to carry the sheep home, right? He wants to spend all night moving all the furniture, looking everywhere for that coin that we might think is not valuable. He wants to, when he sees his son that squandered everything, he wants to run to the sun and celebrate him. It's like that to me too, for myself, because I didn't, there is a part of me that feels like sometimes God is like, it's an obligation. Oh, you have to give grace because you have to. It's like, well, he doesn't have to. He's made that choice to do it, right? Like the verse that God loves us first so that we could love. He made the choice to do it first. And so in that, it's like, okay, that was the convicting or compelling part for me to be like, that's why I need to turn to him, because he actually wants this. It's not like a, he feels bad for me, a pity party, so he has to, or he's just kind of going through the motions. It's a picture of God wanting to be with his people, wanting to see their hearts, wanting to know where they're at, wanting to walk with them back home, wanting to rescue them. And so it's funny, one of the pictures I got was how Pastor Barry says, like, I'm God's favorite, right? I'm God's favorite. He's like, but you're God's favorite and you're God's favorite. Everyone feels like they're God's favorite. In a similar way, it's like God desires to be in relationship with me specifically. Like God wants to know me. And the same way, okay, God wants to know you specifically. God wants to know you specifically and intimately. Like that idea, mind frame, where it's broad but also so specific to the individual.
Hey guys, you know what? We haven't done something in a while.
What?
Let throw you under the bus? I couldn't resist.
Perfect time. Hit the music.
No, it's not about throwing me under the bus, Kyle.
Because we got word that we're not supposed to say that anymore. We've been saying it too much. I'm sorry, I just had to do that.
That was perfect.
I know the person's going to be listening, so that was for you.
That was perfect.
All right, so that music means it's time for Behind Enemy Lines.
Okay, do the music again, because we kind of missed it.
Okay, so since we haven't done it, I guess it deserves a two music intro. We haven't done Behind Enemy Lines in quite a while, so we thought it would be a good time to bring it back, because I think one of the things that is kind of significant about the message that Brett gave is that the enemy really tries to distort what that looks like and what that is and our experience of God being a pursuer, right? And we talked a little bit about it earlier, about how sometimes we have that perspective of God is pursuing us because he wants to punish us, or he's angry at us and he wants, you know, to find us for that. But there's a lot of other ways that the enemy tries to distort our understanding of God as a pursuer and even God's goodness. So I thought this, we could have a little bit discussion about that. So Brett, why don't you kick us off?
Preparing for this message also made me look at different angles of sin. And sin can often seem like it's the bad things that we just do, which it is. But unfortunately, the ways that the enemy works is crafty in so many different ways, that sin, being the absence of God, can be a scenario, a thought, a lie, where we're not physically doing an action that causes the sin, but the way that it can like creep into our mind or change how we view things, I think is really sneaky and crafty. And in that way, sin being a separator, the enemy, its purpose is to cause that separation or those thoughts to feel like God is too distant. He can't handle what I have. I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. Even if you haven't done anything blatantly wrong per se.
Wait. So you're saying that thoughts can be sinful and not just actions?
Exactly. Oh, it's like how you feel about yourself, right? If it's not of God, then kind of what is it?
I bring that up because I think sometimes people forget that.
Yeah.
Like, but I didn't act on it. But it's like, well, I mean, temptation is different, like if you don't act on it, but it's like, you can entertain thoughts and be very sinful in your thoughts.
Yeah, like just even thinking, I'm not worthy I'm not worthy to call myself God's son.
Mm.
Like, that might be a more deep or profound thought you have, mm-hmm. but if you were to ask somebody, is that, does that stem from like sin or does that stem from God? If you're, I guess the perspective that I was taking on it, taking a look at it is, do we sometimes twist how God sees us or what is from him versus if it's not from him, then what is it? And do we characterize that as sin? Because even in the testing or different things, sometimes I think people, and I've been at fault of this, is like, oh, God is making me go through this when it's a bad thing. And that's something that's hard to reconcile, but even that thought is slightly perverse so that the enemy can use it to cause that separation between you and God. Because if you think God brings you bad things and does bad things to you, then what you receive from him will have that tainted part in it.
Yeah, there's going to be a barrier between you because you don't see him for who he truly is, right?
Mm-hmm. And so that's like a very, I think in terms of understanding God as a pursuer, that's a very tricky way that the enemy can use our thoughts or experiences or our perception of things to twist it. And now we may not even realize we have this barrier or this distance between us and God or this separation, when really God's like, that's not, I never said that. That's not how I see you, or that's not what I say or how I, part of my character.
Because I like how you used experience. I think experiences and feelings. So what I'm experiencing doesn't make me think that God's pursuing me.
Mm-hmm.
My experiences don't match up with that.
Mm-hmm.
Or my feelings, like what I'm feeling doesn't seem like God's pursuing me. I feel like he's distant or I feel like he's mad or whatever. But that, yeah, the enemy can twist our understanding and our perception to make it seem like, or make us get a false perception of who God is.
Mm-hmm.
And then right away, then that's a barrier for us to be able to receive from God, to actually trust him and things like that.
Yeah, I think as we're talking about this and talking about how the enemy is very tricky, I do think that the ways that we think about God are very important, right? And so if he's able to implant half-truths, partial truths into our paradigms.
I think the worst ones are the mostly truths.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's like,
so when he's able to implant those, and that's what we're living out of, that produces sins a lot of times, right? And so sometimes we need to have that mindset shift, or kind of the Romans passage about we need to have renewed minds.
Mm.
But I like how Paul talks about it in 2 Corinthians chapter 10.
Mm.
He says, this is chapter 10, verse 5, and it says, we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ, right? And so we need to recognize, are there certain thought patterns that are not in alignment with God's truth, or are they 80% true, or are they 50% true? And we need to make them 100% in alignment and obedient to the Lord, right? And so I do like the way that you're kind of framing that, because the enemy does like to kind of get into our paradigms and the ways that we see the world so that we're living out of a false truth.
And then we start seeing God as pursuing us like Batman, right? And we get a false picture of what that pursuit looks like and what it's going to bring with it.
It's funny you bring that verse up, because I think I've said that verse to myself maybe like 17,000 times. Being an anxious person, and I think one of the biggest ways that the enemy tricks me or messes with me is doubt. And I think it feeds into me being a quote-unquote realist, or it feeds into the anxiety and the fear and the worry. And so even if he can give me a little bit of doubt, then if I take that and it makes me question certain things I know about God, or questions how I feel about certain things or my experiences, that's like enough of a crevice to like make me potentially turn away in certain ways or act out of a more fleshly way because of that little bit of insecurity or doubt. And then now it's like open for me to be vulnerable, I guess, so to say.
I think it's very timely that you said that too, because not this coming Sunday, but the rest of October is going to be Renewing Your Mind series. So Damon giving a little lead into that without even knowing it, probably.
I didn't even know that that's a series that's coming up. So,
yeah,
yay.
So it is, that is an important thing. And I want to share with the listeners too that I hope you don't think that when I speak against these types of, you know, faulty thinking and that kind of stuff, that it's not applicable. I mean, I go through the same stuff too. Mm. And it's not, there's good seasons and worse seasons, but it's that kind of being on that path of continually working on renewing our mind. And those faulty lies, those faulty, like, they don't, my feelings don't match. So, and, you know, am I going to believe that? And it's a constant battle, but I do want our listeners to know that it is something that you can gain traction on and shift.
Yeah. I think we want our listeners to know that there's victory in Christ, right? So it's not like, oh, you just need to change the way you think, or it's a striving thing, but it's an abiding thing. Mm-hmm. As we continue to abide, as he continues to highlight certain areas that we're believing that are not true, well, if he's highlighting it and it's not true, then he's going to help us to see what the truth is and to align ourselves to the truth. But that's why Paul talks about it. We need to take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ. Right. And so we need to recognize which ones aren't. And then we need to take hold of them and say, this is not true. Mm-hmm. And kind of make that as a declaration. And as all the kids will say, a declaration is when you say something loud and proud. So we could say it loud and proud. This is not true.
I think highlighting it is good too, because what I've found and kind of my perspective and mindset on it is I want to help be a voice that combats the voices like of the enemy. And so I'm not, whenever I talk to somebody, and I'll even say that explicitly to preface it, is in my own experience, I've heard a lot of, or the voices that have stuck with me were not ones from God or God's truth. And so if that's what you feel like the only thing that you hear, then what are you going to believe? And so I think part of our roles as brothers and sisters, as leaders, as friends, are we helping be a light by combating what the enemy says with what God says or his truth? And so some of it is not, you know, it's not to shame anyone or say you're doing things wrong, but it's like, hey, I don't want you to think what the enemy is trying to get you to think. Mm-hmm. I want you to see things how God sees you. And so this is what I feel like God, how God sees you. This is what I feel like, this is what I think God is saying. And so I don't want to leave you with just hearing lies or deception or twisted things or partial truth, because I actually care for you. Mm-hmm. And so I want you to hear what God has for you. And so I've tried to have that mindset and perspective, even when I've received things, and then when I also go to share things with people, is like, I'm not gonna just let you walk around hearing the enemy. Like, that's messed up. I'm not doing my job either, yeah, right? And right. So it's like, that's how I feel like I could help fight for people.
Yeah, that's really good. And like we talked about a few episodes ago, sometimes it's not good just to take one verse and read it out of context. So, but it's cool because as you're talking, Brett, you're really describing the verses that are around that part. So I'll start with verse 3 of 2 Corinthians chapter 10. It says, "For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God." This is then where the part that we read before comes in, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. So it's cool how you're talking about it, because that's really what the heart of this verse is talking about. There are certain arguments and pretensions that set themselves up in our minds that keep us away from the knowledge of God and the truth of who God is. And so that's where we need to take captive every thought, because we recognize that there are certain things that the enemy is trying to put in there to keep us from knowing God fully.
I can share one example, like what that looks like. Growing up with my anxiety and my struggles, that unfortunately dictated a lot of my choices and what happened and kind of my path in life. Mm-hmm. And I found that I wanted somebody to understand me in the way where if they literally just said, like, I have your back, like that would have went such a long way, more than just those words. Like just having that understanding of like, even if this goes to the crapper, like I'm there with you. I have your back. And so I think because in certain situations and areas, I didn't experience that or hear that from people that I wanted to, it then made me feel like, okay, that means God doesn't have my back. And so I kind of projected what I was experiencing onto who he was, right? And then now the enemy has a foothold in my mind that, yeah, God doesn't have your back, so you can't expect this or you can't expect that. And then it leads to me, you know, trying to control things or make certain outcomes happen and hold on to things tighter instead of living more free in the way that God has designed me. And so it wasn't until experience certain relationships, getting healing, prayer, talking to people about it more openly, that I was able to experience the other side of it and then slowly be able to really feel and believe like, okay, God was there. He did have my back because of the ways that a simple thought in my head of, okay, people don't have my back or whatever, then God, I don't feel like God has my back. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of just ballooned into something way bigger than it originally started with. And so being able to use that verse and make my thoughts obedient, having God take captive of my thoughts and make them obedient to him was something that I, continued to pray over myself. And over time it shifted, but, I could see, to me, that is a living example for myself of how the enemy was able to take a foothold from just a small thing and change how I looked at God and then how it played out.
Yeah, I think listening to you share that, and Brett, when you were sharing previously also, it reminded me of the importance of community. Mm. You know, like we're at our church this year, we're talking about stronger together, and it's great that, you know, you can speak words of truth into somebody else, but if you're not willing to let other people speak into you, it's like, then who's got your back? Mm-hmm. Right? Who's got you covered? But then I was thinking, well, sometimes it's got to start that way first, where you invite somebody in and you're vulnerable and share your doubts or your fears, because otherwise it's, I see some lie that my friends, hey, Brett, you're my friend. I see a lie that you're believing, but I'm not willing to bring you into my space and show that I want to be vulnerable. Then it's like, yeah, I'm not going to share it with him because what if he turns around and directs it at me and I'm not ready for that, or I'm not willing to go there. So now I'll just let it be. But it's like, man, that's another tool of the enemy to keep us in shame, darkness, or whatever, where we can't build each other. We can't sharpen each other. Mm. But that's really what God wants us to do in community.
Yeah, on that note, I want to share my appreciation and thanks for our small group. Mm. In a lot of ways, it's nice to be in a different season. but I'm just so thankful for, I'm thankful that they haven't given up. Mm. I think that's the biggest thing. If I really think about it, my appreciation doesn't even directly involve me or like that they were willing, like, yeah, I'm thankful that they were willing to be a part of ministry time, but I'm so thankful that they continue to fight for what they know and what they feel like God wants for them, because for a lot of them, they had every reason in certain ways to not. And I know it took a lot, and there's certain things that people are still working through, but even in that, them pursuing and them trying to be all that God has created and called them to be, that helps me just kind of by overflow. And so even if they weren't in the best places, like, that continued fight and willingness to persevere and to try and to whatever it is, even have to go through the mud, that helps me even without like it doing anything directly, because to me that is sharpening to see how you do persevere, how you remain resilient, how you continue to seek the Lord, how you deal with the unfortunate things of life. And so in that, I feel very honored and thankful to walk with them and be a part of it, and that to see them and their willingness to, after all of that, come up and be willing to pray for other people. Like, I felt blessed by that, and I'm so proud of them and thankful that I could be a part of that group and walk with them. And so it just reminds me of the community aspect, and just like, it's needed. It's needed. The enemy wants to isolate you and wants you to feel like you can't be a part of something or can't be with people, or they're not going to like you or judge you. But when you experience it in the other way, you can totally feel how, like, no, this is how God intended it.
Yeah, I think the perseverance, the persistence, the grit, a lot of that comes from being in community. And that's why the enemy does want us to be isolated and by ourselves, because it is hard to continue to persevere when you are by yourself. It's very difficult to do that. And so it's good that you guys have a solid small group that you're able to walk together. And I think that has that's a big part of the puzzle to them continuing to pursue the Lord and continuing to walk in this, is because they have that support system of the small group to be able to do that and to get through those seasons. All right. Well, I'm wondering if we should add or if we should just.
Well, I think earlier you said you wanted to just touch a little bit on the lost son or the prodigal son. Did you want to go a little bit into that?
Well, that's what I was wondering. Do you think we should go into that?
Could do it a little bit and just wrap it up with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things that I was thinking about, especially as Brett was talking about the three different stories of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son, is that, you know, there were actually two lost sons in that story, right? The older brother, at the end of the story, he's still outside and the father's calling him to come inside to the party, right? And there were two lost sons in that story. But as I was processing and thinking and sitting through that, kind of the fullness of the story, right? Because a lot of times the focus is on the younger brother and him running, leaving, and then coming back and being reinvited. And sometimes people forget that there's actually two brothers in that story. Is that I think there's quite a few parallels between what's going on in that story and then also what was going on at the time, right? And so I thought it would be cool if we could talk about them a little bit and see if there's a little bit more there than we originally would think. But so some of the parallels that I saw in that story is that I associated the older brother with Israel, right? And so the people of Israel, they were with God, right? They knew God, they experienced God, they were with the Father, right? And there was also another set of people they called them the Gentiles, right? That they were the non-Jews. Mm-hmm. They were outside of the community of the Jews, and they were doing what was right in their own eyes. And they had wild living. There was a lot of other stuff going on. And so I felt like there was a parallel between the Gentiles and the younger brother. But the heart of the father was always for the younger brother to come home, right? And so as Jesus is telling this story, I kind of felt like, is there something going on where he's trying to say the older brother had a responsibility in this whole thing to emulate the heart of the father in this whole scenario? But he didn't get it, and so that's what caused him to be separated. Right? That's what caused him to complain at the end. That's what caused him to get upset when the younger brother finally did come home. Right? And we saw a lot of that in Jesus's time, where a lot of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law and those people had issues with Jesus and his inclusion of the Gentiles. And even later on with Paul and his inclusion of the Gentiles into the believers and things like that, is that there was supposed to be like the select people,
the us and them.
Yeah, kind of the us and them. Like, look, we were with you the whole time. We're your chosen people. What about us? We've been, you know, following the law. We've been doing all these things while they've just been living it out and having fun and doing these other things. Excuse me. So I was kind of wondering if maybe in this whole story, Jesus is saying, I'm actually a picture of what it would look like for there to be a good older brother, right? The older brother who reflects the heart of the father, the older brother who goes out to get the lost, right? So he went to also the older brothers to bring them back in. He also went to the younger brothers to bring them back in, right? Says he went to like the Decapolis, or he went to Samaria. He went to these other places and talked to people that no one would talk to, like the woman at the well. He talked to all these different people to bring them home, to bring them home to the Father, and trying to illustrate that this is what the older brother was supposed to do. The one that experienced the heart of the Father was supposed to be the one to go out and bring them back in. And so I know there's probably some gaps in there, but it was just something that I was thinking about as we were talking about this story, is that it kind of parallels some of the things that were going on at the time, where the Israelites, some of them, like the Pharisees, had issues with this inclusion of the Gentiles, this inclusion of the other people that were outside of the family, who had left the family, right? And yeah, so just some things to think about. What do you guys think?
I think there's some parallels and some ways to look at that. It's a little, for me, I guess it's a little different with the Gentiles because they weren't part of the chosen people and then left and then come back. So like the younger brother was part of the family and then left and came back. So a little bit different there. But I think the heart of the father wanted everybody back together. So I think there's that aspect. So I had never really thought of Jesus being the representation of the good older brother, or just the brother, not necessarily even the good or the older or the younger. He's just the brother that wants everybody into the household, because that's the father's heart. So he represents just, yeah, the brother who sees the full picture of the father.
I agree. I think I think what comes to mind for me is the lost son is focused on the one that goes out, and then there was a son that was also still there, which physically, maybe he's not lost, but he's lost because he doesn't get it. And so Jesus, I think, I know what you're saying in wording terms of like, he's the other brother, but he's also just a reflection of like what, for lack of better terms, like a good son looks like, right, in his reflection of the father's heart. And so it makes me actually more also sad for the brother that was there the whole time, because it's like, bro, he was there the whole time and you don't get it. And you're not willing to even celebrate when your brother comes back. It's like, that's a sucky picture too. And so I think it also highlights to me the idea of being lost. It's not just that you are far away from God or potentially doing sinful things, but if you are just not connected, if you are not trying to see things from Father God's lens, if you're not kind of like, well, what are you doing then, kind of, right? And if it plays out that way where, yeah, a situation like that comes to you and you're not responding in the way that God would want you to, I think that's a good reflection point to see. Like, am I lost, or is there something that I'm getting lost in translation there? Because, yeah, it's yeah, sucky place to be.
It brings to mind what you were talking about in your sermon. Where are you at?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so for the younger brother, part of it was a condition of his heart, but it was also a physical distance that he wasn't there. But for the older brother who was there, there was actually a condition of his heart issue, right? And which showed some of the separation. And he talks about it at the end of the story when he's complaining about the younger brother. He's complaining about the stuff that he gets. And it's like, you never gave me even a goat or something like that, right? And there was a condition of his heart that seemed like part of the reason that he was striving or working or even stuck around was to get the stuff and not to be with the father. Right? So I do think that there's an aspect of that we can relate to. It's just one checking ourselves too, like, where am I at? Am I doing these things so that I can get something from God, or am I doing these things as part of out of my relationship with him?
And he had a distorted view of his father, right? Because the father replies, all I had is yours. Like, all you had to do was ask. And he didn't see him that way. Like, he didn't see him as a good father or a kind or generous. So he missed out on so much because of his misconception of who his father was.
That's a whole nother message.
But I think that's where it is really important for us to have the correct view of who God is, right? Because having an incorrect view of who God is can lead us to be like the younger brother, but it could also lead us to be like the older brother. And in both cases, there was a part of them in their heart condition that was lost, right? And we want to be like Jesus in having that connection and being found.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a reminder, but also a call out to our listeners to do that in community. Like, you can try to get your view right of God in your own mind, but as things spin around, there's going to be little things that start to separate, and their little lies start getting in there. But you need to be able to share things and process things with other people, with other Christians. And that's the important part, is if we're not continually, hey, is this right about how I'm seeing God, or it's not matching up with my expectations or my experiences or my feelings. But to do that on your own it can be done, but it's very tricky. And most of the time it leads you to partial truths or even way off truths.
My mind is going further places. But in short, I agree. And it paints the picture of like the younger brother, the son that was squandered everything. Like, what did he do to get celebrated or receive the truth from the Father. Like, he had to, even though it was still a false picture, admit what he did wrong. He came and was vulnerable. He physically turned back, and he shared. Mm-hmm. And so in the same way you're talking about community, okay, we might get things wrong, mm-hmm. but if we bring them to the table, if we bring them into the light, if we talk about them, that's an opportunity for God to work and God to change things. Mm-hmm. And then it makes me question, okay, so the real only difference between the two sons at the end of the day is one of them, maybe because he was realized how broken he was, mm-hmm. repented and turned back to the Father and brought things to light.
He was humble.
He was humble. Yeah. The other brother, it doesn't say, and so that's why I'm like, my mind's going everywhere, but I wonder if like he didn't, it doesn't seem like he shared any of how he felt with the Father until that point, and it drove him to a point where he was unable to come to the house and celebrate. And so like, when you don't talk about those things, when you don't share those things, when you don't have someone to say, hey, no, I don't think that's like, you get kind of, you can get stuck in a place where now when there is the embrace and the celebration, you can't receive it or be a part of it. Right. And so that might be extrapolating too much, because that goes into the psychology of the other brother. But it just, as we were sharing and both of you were sharing at the end, it's like the main difference was that the younger brother like turned around and like laid it all out. Mm-hmm. And then what was he met with? And so it's like, for us, when it comes to walking in community, when it comes to being with our church family, when it comes to God, are we able to lay it out there like that? Are we able to be open enough to receive that, or yeah, a willingness to see where maybe we can turn back to God, or we can lay things down before Him? And I hope that everybody has a community, a small group, or people at church where you feel comfortable enough to do that, because otherwise we're missing out on the party.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Yeah, I think that's a good place for us to close out this episode. Kyle's looking at me like he has one more thing he wants to say.
I think it's not just a hope that people have that. If you don't have it, reach out and you'll get connected. We can connect you with people too. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, well, hope you have it. If you're not, tough luck. I mean, but it takes the willingness to say, I need that, and can somebody help me?
Mm-hmm.
So Catalyst family, this is a family. Mm-hmm. So there are a bunch of people here that want to connect, want to be able to walk together, want to be able to support you. So if you are missing that, reach out. And Dale's a great person to reach out to as the director of all the small groups, and she knows who's available and what's open. And
yeah, there's different formats. There's like more of the one-on-one, there's the small group, there's different types of things that can hopefully find a fit for you.
Yeah, so reach out, don't hesitate. There's people that are wanting to walk with you. So remember, God is pursuing you, and He's in a good mood. He's not out there to get you. He's not Batman. He's out there to lavish you with who He is.
Justice.
I was gonna say, I'm like, come on, Brett, you gotta bring that voice one more time. He just teed it up for you. So
all right.
No, you gotta say something like better than, you gotta say like love or something like
nothing can stop me from loving you.
There you go. All right.
All right. Well, that does it for this episode. Until next time, may you experience God's heart for you to flourish in every season.